Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. My guest today is Sarah Ayres, an author, educator, and co-founder of Bello Campo Farm in Wisconsin. Sarah and I dish about taking chances, educating ourselves on where our food comes from, and how it depends is a go-to answer for a lot of our questions. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Sarah Ayres, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day today. I always start our discussions with how did my guest and I come to know each other? Do you want to share with the listener a little bit about what brought us together and how we found each other?
Yeah, so we were both in an Amy Porterfield challenge, I guess you would call it, boot camp, something like that. It was like a week-long challenge on list building and, you know, just trying to develop our respective businesses and, you know, get going and be digital entrepreneurs, I guess.
For those of the listeners who don't know who Amy Porterfield is, she's quite the big deal online marketing guru, and she actually held live boot camp sessions with us. I mean, they were held in real time, depending on when people could actually make it. They were recorded too. But I love bringing things up like this because I feel like when we are established in the roles that we play, right, sometimes we get kind of stagnant or stuck. And it's really nice to take chances like that where we all got a chance to hang out. And I think there were maybe like 9,000 people at one point, I think I saw in the group. And so I say this because I know a lot of the listeners are maybe first starting out in something or having their hand in something, or maybe they're growing very stagnant in their own role and they're wondering what else to do. And so if you feel like you have a voice, if you feel like you want to open yourself up to opportunities and you're not afraid to make friends on the internet with complete strangers, I think that's really cool. Like we get to widen and broaden our connections, our network, and then also be able to find out where there might be ways to collaborate with each other. And I just think it's kind of neat. So it's nice that we've made online friends, and hopefully we'll see where our relationship goes in the future. I'm really excited to see, you know, what you end up doing. But I want to start my first question, my first official question, with go back in time before you and I connected, and tell us a little bit about your history, your cultural upbringing, where you grew up, and especially around the world of food.
Sure. So I have grown up in the Midwest here in the U.S. I was born in South Carolina, but we moved back to Iowa when I was four, I think, or three. And my parents are both from the Midwest, Indiana, Illinois area. And so my dad got a job. He was a college professor. We lived in a relatively small town, like 50,000 people in Iowa for most of my life, and pretty standard upbringing. My parents have always been, especially my mom, in the like to some degree grow your own food world. So we always had a garden. We had chickens most of my life. Not, you know, sometimes the chicken died and we didn't get new chickens right away, that kind of thing. But we had big garden. My dad loves tomatoes. He will eat them like apples in the summer. So like literally there's been years that he's grown 400 or 500 pounds of tomatoes in a summer. So he just loves them. And so, so we had, you know, in the city had a little, you know, bed that had strawberries, apple tree, pear tree, peach tree, you know, just small scale, but, you know, lots of food. So it was normal for me to like go out to the garden and get snacks. We had a, you know, rule that you got home from school like 3:30 or something. And then you had until I think 4:15 was our cutoff for snacks. And we couldn't eat after that because we're going to eat dinner at like 6. We weren't allowed to have snacks after 4:15. Well, if you got busy playing or forgot or whatever, then all of a sudden it's like after 4:15 and snack time has ended and you didn't have enough snack. Well, I would in the summertime or in the spring, fall, would go outside and eat food from the garden. And I suspect my mother knew that I was snacking in the garden and perhaps didn't care because it was fresh food grown in the garden and she was not concerned about me filling up so much that I couldn't eat my dinner. But we did have a dwarf peach tree that just bore like crazy several years, not, I mean, like 3 or 4 years in a row, to the point that it was like breaking its own branches. It had so many peaches on it. we had to like prop them up because it was so heavy. And so, yeah, you know, going out and just eating a freshly picked ripe peach with like the juice, like running all over your face. And it was an illicit peach, right? Because I wasn't supposed to be having it. It was after snack time. You know, it's just, it's fun. You know, that's fun childhood food memories. So now I live on a sort of a hobby farm. Like we grow a lot of our own food. We don't sell a large amount of it. We sell to friends and family and people we know in the community occasionally when we have extra things. But I have four kids. The oldest is 11 and the youngest is 5. And so they've just, this is normal for them to go out to the garden and get food. We also have sheep. We had cows. We don't currently have cows. We have chickens. They know where food comes from and that it's not the grocery store, right? They understand, like they've asked me, we did have cows and we did milk one of the cows occasionally, although she was not a big fan of it. And so we didn't get a ton of milk from her. My daughter still asks sometimes like, well, whose milk is this? And I'm like, well, it's from the store. And she's like, but you know, there's a cow out there that gave this milk. I'm like, yeah, well, we don't know the cow's name. They don't tell you that when it comes in the jug, you know, but they understand, right? That this milk came from a cow, like an individual cow. Like, I mean, obviously the milk is probably a collection of cows because they put it all in a big vat, but like still, you know, they just understand where it comes from. At this point anyway, I mean, I feel like I have had the conversation, I think, with each of my kids individually about how, you know, you go to the store, they're out of something that they wanted. And to the kid, it's just like, what do you mean? Like, that's where the food comes from. So like, how could the store not have whatever snack or something that they were interested in? And it's like, well, but you get it, right? That it doesn't magically appear in the store, right? Somebody has to grow this. Somebody has to process it. Somebody has to, you know, wash it or, you know, bag it up or whatever they do to turn it from corn and wheat or whatever into bread. Like that's like a process. It's done by people. And then it's, you know, travels to the store and then you buy it. And now that they've seen us like growing and picking and processing and then cooking in some cases the food in the garden, it makes sense. They're like, yeah, well, somewhere out there, we don't know their names, but somewhere out there, they're farmers and there are factory workers and people who are making this stuff. So they just are much more aware and also more aware of the difference between fresh food and processed food. And, you know, we have rules in our house, like you eat your main protein first, and then you can have, you know, fruit, and then you have like the chips or, you know, crackers or like just empty carb, but just that there's foods that are better than you and worse for you. The foods that are all the time foods and foods that are special foods. Certain things are just full of sugar, and that sugar is not something that you want to have all the time. And we don't prevent them from ever having, you know, candy or ice cream or, you know, like we don't really have a lot of taboo foods in our household, but they just recognize that they can't have that every day because it's just not gonna make them feel good long term. So I did have one funny story about food. My youngest, apparently I had been telling them that they couldn't have more of certain desserts because they had too many calories. And so my daughter, who was like 3 or maybe 2, was just learning to talk. And so like, you know, she was like saying she wanted something. What do you want? And she said, I want calorie. And I was just like, okay, so I'm guessing you want dessert. And I understand that I've apparently been saying too much about the excess calories in some of these desserts that we had on offer. So, but the kids still joke about that now to this day about, oh, I need some more calorie. So the older ones thought it was pretty funny.
My dad and my grandparents were also gardeners in a smaller sense. We had a very tiny backyard. We had a cherry tree at one point, gooseberries as well. So the fruits and vegetables, mm-hmm. We didn't have livestock, but we also had the tomato. As soon as you said the thing about your tomatoes, I had written down earlier, my dad, we would pick tomatoes off of the vine, slice it in half, put a little bit of salt on it and eat it like mm-hmm. an apple. We loved doing mm-hmm. that. It was so tasty. And so sure. The fact that so much of what you had been weaned on and raised on were whole foods that are grown. And, you know, we kind of, in the food processing world, we see a lot of times the word like natural on things. So I don't want to confuse anybody by defining it in that way, but we're talking literally like things are just whole picked out of whatever. And then you are manipulating how to make that. So did you also have time spent with your family in the kitchen? Did you learn recipes and how to create meals out of these things? Can you share a little bit about like what some of the go-to meals were that you remember or that you played a role in? Because we think it's important to encourage children to have hands-on and exposed to a lot of different things.
So from a pretty early age, my mom had us in the kitchen. So we ate dinner together pretty much every night as a family. And so we had, you know, the full on, you know, salad almost every night. Although when I was really small, it was like literally iceberg lettuce and like carrots. And that was all that was in the salad pretty much. But my mom evolved, you know, in the summertime when she had fresh, you know, things that she could grow, you know, grow iceberg lettuce because it's actually not that easy to grow in your backyard. But she grew stuff until we would have kale and spinach and other things in it. But like, you know, we always had salad, but she has now moved on and has a little bit more nutritious salads. But you know, that was just expected. And then my favorite thing that my mom makes is homemade spaghetti sauce. In fact, like, and my kids now are just like, they've never really, the only time they've had it is at like at school lunch or at a restaurant or something. And they always come and they're like, why does this spaghetti sauce taste so weird? And I'm like, well, because commercial spaghetti sauce, they tend to put a lot of salt and sugar in it. And they're just like, why? And I'm like, I don't know, because I think it tastes disgusting, but like I make it from just, you know, like diced tomatoes, tomato sauce, tomato paste, and like three herbs, you know, like bay leaves, basil, and parsley, and onions and garlic. And that's it. That's all that's in it. Nothing else. No other fillers, no other salt, sugar, you know, all those kinds of things. And so that's what I'm used to. That's what I love. My mom, it's my mom's recipe. And so I always helped her do those kinds of things. The way things worked at our house was you had to set the table. So I had two nights of the week. My brother had two nights of the week. If I had like Monday, Wednesday, and my brother had Tuesday, Thursday, or the opposite. And my mom had Fridays and my dad had Saturdays. And then Sundays we had everybody had leftovers from what we had had throughout the week. And so, you know, there was this whole like, and you had a, you know, a certain set of things that you would sort of, that my mom usually had on hand all the times that you could sort of choose from. But I would always pick spaghetti. So like we had, I think, so we would always have spaghetti like on Mondays because that was my first choice and I would always pick it every week. And then, you know, then my brother would pick something and kind of depending on what he picked, like, cause I hated chili. I don't like, I actually eat beans now, but as a kid, kidney beans were like my nemesis. I hated them. And so if he picked chili, then I would retaliate with like chicken and spinach, I think, because he didn't like cooked spinach, you know, and then he would pick some, you know, he would pick like pork chops the next night or whatever. So like, it was, but if he was nice and picked like pizza or something, then I would, you know, not pick cooked spinach or whatever, you know, so it was just kind of this whole like system, you know, and then on the night that we picked, we had to set the table. And obviously we had to eat our food because we'd picked it, right? So like it was, you know, a mechanism for my parents to encourage us to eat whatever was for dinner. Because, and if you didn't like it, it was like, yeah, but you get to pick tomorrow. So, you know, just sort of suffer through today and then you get to do whatever you want tomorrow. And then my mom would usually pick fish because nobody else was ever going to pick that. And then my dad usually picked hamburgers because he loves hamburgers and that would be always what he picked. And I don't know, my brother and I don't know if we didn't, I don't know that we didn't like hamburgers. We just knew dad was always going to pick hamburgers. So we just would let, you know, him have that. And then we'd have, you know, whatever on Sunday, then you could choose from whatever leftovers were left. You could choose what you want to kind of make up your own plate, which was also kind of fun. And so we kind of do that in my house. Now I don't have, so each of the kids have a night, but they don't necessarily really pick what's for dinner that night. Cause they're now getting old enough. We probably could start doing that, but we actually have more of a themed night. So we have like meatless Mondays and then like usually like tacos or nacho Tuesday. And then they were trying to do an alliterative thing for each day, but it was starting to get hard. So I think it's whatever Wednesdays they had, and no one could come up with anything that rhymed with, you know, that started with Thursday. So Thursdays is also sort of whatever. And then fish Fridays and then spaghetti Saturdays. And all my kids will eat the spaghetti that I make. And so we usually have that every Saturday and they're used to it. And it's helpful for me because then it cuts down a little bit of the like, what's for dinner and the complaining about it, because they know, to the point where they'll be like, what's for dinner? And I'm like, what day is it? And they're like, oh, right. And so I don't have to just constantly field from four kids. And I also do a monthly meal plan for me, which I started actually during the pandemic, because when it was all of a sudden, like, you could only go to the grocery store for like limited hours, like twice a month or something. And every time you went, you were like, especially at the beginning, you were like taking your life in your hands. You felt like I was like, okay, I need to know what I'm getting, because I can't just run back out there. Because I mean, before that, it felt like we were going to the grocery store like every other day, because somebody would forget something, or we'd decide to make something and we were missing an ingredient or whatever. And despite the fact that we grow a lot of our own food, there's always something, right? You know, it wasn't a big deal. But when it became a big deal all of a sudden, I was like, we have to plan. Know what we're getting. And so we set it up now a month at a time. And it also helps, because then the kids, who are now, except for one, all old enough to read, will just go look and see what is for dinner. And then I don't have to. And it's easy for me, because I only have to spend the energy and mental energy of trying to decide what to have like once a month. And then I usually have the previous month's schedule there. And then I can kind of be like, okay, well, this thing my husband really likes, but nobody else really likes it, so he can have it once a month. So I'll just like schedule that, you know, thing that he likes. And then, you know, like the things that everybody likes, you know, kind of alternate. I don't like to have the same thing every day, but things that they like will kind of alternate. And then I have the theme day, so I kind of know what subsection of the recipes, you know, to choose from. You know, I've actually written a series of children's chapter books, and in the book, so there's we're on book three now. The first book was about, it's about life on our farm, but it is narrated by spiders that live in different parts of our farm. And so the first book was narrated by the chicken coop spider, and the second book is narrated by the garden spider. And so the year that I started in terms of telling what's going on our farm was when we got the chickens. So like the first year is all about our first year with the flock of chickens that we have and all of the mistakes that we made basically in raising those chickens. And then the second year is all about our garden and all the food that we grow in our garden. And the garden spider particularly likes tomatoes, which we do too, because the tomatoes get squishy and fall off the vine and they attract lots of bugs. And so the spider loves, but she doesn't eat the tomatoes. She thinks they're disgusting, but she loves the fact that they are really good at attracting bugs. So she talks about that quite a bit. And then now we're in book three, which is the kitchen spider. And so she talks all about what life is like watching what she calls her cooking show from the corner of our kitchen. And she is fascinated by human food. And she just loves watching all of the recipes. And so each book in the series goes through a year in the life of the farm month by month. And the spiders write letters to each other about what's going on in their part of the farm during that month. And in this particular book, Roberta, the kitchen spider, sends recipes, her favorite recipe from that month. So they're seasonal recipes, and all of them have at least something that we've grown, you know, on our farm in them, and just things that, you know, become available that month that she's excited because she's been waiting, you know, for it finally to be, you know, strawberry season or whatever.
So in the dietetics world and in the food service world, what you were doing with those monthly meal plans is known as like a cycle menu, where you have certain things that you change up or rejigger in some way, or you introduce a new set of recipes. So I kind of fangirl a little bit over people who do stuff like this. I used to love making meal plans. Now I've kind of just gotten, it's just my boyfriend and I, so I've just kind of gotten in the heavy rotation of whatever works. But I think we have similar structures, not necessarily on Mondays we do this and Tuesdays do we do this, but we do kind of alternate some things that we just know work well. And so I wanted to first of all commend you that you include your children in on the decision-making, just like how you were included in on it too. But also we've had some discussions too in the podcast episodes previously where we discussed things like picky eating and the frustration that lies on the parents or the providers of, you know, what do I do? So we've encouraged people to not get so stressed out. It's not like your child's going to starve to death by missing one meal, but we encourage something similar to what you're doing. Like you create some structure, and like you did as well with like almost a hierarchy of foods. Like these are the things you're still allowed to have your cookie and whatever else fun stuff you want, but we're going to treat it almost like, you know, we have things that we want to make sure nourish us, and then we have the fun things we're going to have, and that the freedom in that as well, and the fact that children will be probably more likely to taste other things that they're not necessarily in love with, because they know that their day is coming up next. Like, I get to choose something here and I get to eat something that you chose. And so you play a role of the distribution of responsibility, or what's known as the division of responsibility in the picky eating world. And then you also encourage socializing too, right? Allowing me to step aside. And, or also I wrote down how you kind of like the war on foods, like, oh yeah, you're going to pick this and I'm going to pick that tomorrow. I think it's like you have this yes. retaliation through food, which I think is hysterical. Yes. But I love the themes. I love the freedom. I love that you also encourage leftovers, because some people are prone to maybe throw things out, and you recognize things will go bad at a certain time and we'll just, you know, empty things out, and you get to pick and choose that these
foods. My kids love leftovers. They love it because they get to choose from everything we've had for the whole week what they want to eat, right? Like, they, you know, they've eaten it before, right? But they just are so excited that they get to pick, and they can pick like a little bit of this and a little bit of that and put it together on their plate, and we'll let them, you know. And like, they literally are like so excited. Also, usually leftovers night is the night that when we eat together, they get to like watch a video or something like while they're eating, because it's just like, mommy's day off, like just eat the leftovers, and I'm not, you know, excited about it. And so like, so it's like, that's also an incentive, but like, they just get excited to like have leftover, which I'm like, perfect. You know, like, I am excited that you're excited about leftover. I actually have an article on my blog, how we, you know, our kids eat salad pretty much every night for dinner, unless we have something that, there are certain dishes that I just don't serve a salad with, but like tacos or something, but like most nights they'll eat salad, and they all eat like a full bowl of salad. And how we've gotten them to do that is to kind of just let them dictate certain things about it. Like you were talking about, like the division of decision-making, because my daughter has been eating salad since forever, but she likes to have like different dressings. Like, she likes to have mommy salad dressing, because we make our own salad dressings, just like oil and vinegar. But I do olive oil and apple cider vinegar and garlic powder and dill. And my husband doesn't like olive oil or apple cider vinegar, so he does like regular, you know, canola oil or something, and like lemon juice. While Emma has to like mix and match, you know, so she's got like a little bit of each of the salad dressings of each of us. And then my son, he likes to dip his salad in ranch. So he has his entire salad, but we don't like chop up the carrots. We don't chop up the celery. Like, we just give it to him in the bowl, and then he puts ranch, and then he just dips, and he will eat the entire bowl. He'll eat more salad than the other kids, as long as he gets to dip it in ranch. He'll eat it. And then my middle daughter, she decided she loves spinach. I don't know why, but she just decided that she loves spinach. And so she will eat spinach, and, you know, she'll eat carrots and stuff like that. But like, she, and tomatoes, she likes tomatoes. But like doesn't want to eat lettuce. Right. But she will eat spinach. Like, she loves spinach. I don't, my husband went through a phase where he was talking to them about like Popeye the Sailor Man. And so she just got excited. Well, then the youngest needed something of her own that was different. So she loves kale, and she loves it. She will go out to the garden and like pick kale and eat it straight out of the garden, because it's her thing, right? She's taken ownership of kale. It is now her thing. So she will eat spinach, but it's like, you know, it's not her thing. And she'll eat, you know, lettuce if she has to, but she will eat kale like by the handful, because I don't know, she's decided that it's hers. And so now she eats it. And then we also do a lot of condiments, like toppings. My kids love pickled things. So they actually slice up pickles, pickled beets, pickled peppers, pepperoncini or whatever they're called, sauerkraut. They love putting sauerkraut on their salad, green onion. They get to choose what they put. And so we even went through a phase where they were putting different herbs. The rule was, whatever you make, you have to eat, right? So think about it, smell it, like, what's going to go well together. But like, you can't just like dump some herb that you is unpalatable all over your food and then refuse to eat it. Like, so be, you know, conscious of your choices, but you can take whatever you want. So they would, you know, they put thyme or parsley or whatever I had. And it was a great way at the time. I used up a lot of my old herbs that probably needed to be switched out anyway, because they were putting them on, you know, and then just on anything. They put them on pasta, they put them on, you know, in soups, whatever we were having, they had the option. And then they were going through a lot of herbs, and I was just like, not sure that they were, you know, it became like a game, and it was a little, you know, they started making a mess. And I was just like, okay, well, you know, if you find something you really like, yeah, you can go get it, but we're not going to have it out on the table anymore because it was just becoming a little bit too much. But yeah, but it's like, you know, a lot of herbs have good nutrition, like they're kind of superfoods, some of them. And so it was something that they could, again, give them agency, give them the opportunity to choose. But I think the other secret that I have is anything that the kid has grown, has chosen to grow themselves, that they grow, they will eat, even if they don't actually like the thing. Cause like I let my kids pick, out of the seed catalogs when we were getting ready for our garden. And they love picking things that have funny names. Like they love, you know, so they eat like, you know, dinosaur kale or dragon tongue beans or whatever. I mean, my son has grown dragon tongue beans every year, and I don't even think he like, they're a relatively large potted, like, and we just have them in like stir fries and stuff like that, but they're okay. I mean, they're not my favorite bean. I don't really like beans. So they're not my favorite bean, but he's obsessed with them because he thinks the name is funny. He's a kid who will eat just about anything, but he has certain texture issues. Like flavor doesn't seem to bother him, you know, different. He'll eat just about anything, but, certain texture things, like he doesn't like raw tomatoes. Like the texture is not good for him. Like mushy things are not okay for him. But I mean, my kids love, you know, sugar snap peas and things that they can go pick themselves. They really love that. And yeah, again, you know, salad things that they can go and pick, and things that are funny shapes, right? Like carrots that are like split. They call them like the pants carrot, and they fight over who gets to have the pants carrot in their salad, or just any kind of weird, you know, a pepper that, you know, sometimes peppers when they grow, they just have like weird lumps that stick out. Oh my gosh, they think they're so hilariously funny, and they just want to be the one that gets to eat the weird fruit. Or we had cherry tomatoes that like twinned, where they just don't quite separate, right? You know, and they call them like the snowman tomato or the you know, the butterfly tomato or whatever.
This is the fantastic thing about being able to recognize that just because there's a quote unquote ugly or weirdly shaped fruit or vegetable or produce item, it's not taking away from taste and nutritional value. But we know in America, in the supermarkets and the places that we go purchase our foods, everything's got to look aesthetically pleasing. Otherwise, forget it. So I love that they're like, who can get the weird shaped carrot and the tomato with two heads on it or whatever.
Yes,
that becomes part of the thing. I also wanted to go back for a sec, because when you were talking about the herbs and seasonings, I wanted to share with the listeners as well that this is a great opportunity to have each individual person in the home customize the meal. So even if maybe people aren't all fond of whatever the main dish is, they can jazz things up with a dressing, a sauce, a side, whatever those things are. And also, it's a great opportunity to experiment with those tastes and flavors. I'm a huge fan of, just because the recipe calls for something doesn't mean you have to add it in there. Like I don't like certain flavors and some pungencies. And then other times I play around with flavor profiles like caraway seeds or paprika and different kinds of smoke levels. And it really is something with like, just open up the little container, you know, smell it, maybe put your finger in there and taste, or a little teaspoon and taste a little bit of it. And so if you did grow up yourself not loving fruits and vegetables, or specifically more vegetables and side dishes, it's possible that, no offense to whoever was cooking it, didn't know how to season things, or season yes. things without tasting first. It was too heavy on the garlic, not heavy enough on the lemon, you know, whatever it is, to really bring out the flavors. Because depending on the chemical structure and the makeup of an actual plant item, sometimes it does lend itself to be a little bit more tasty raw, or better cooked, or drizzled yeah. with olive oil, or whatever it is.
Or, you know, for budgetary reasons, yes. like my mom, I think, never bought fresh spinach. And she grew it herself, but she never bought it at the store because it was, in her mind, insanely expensive and not worth the money, because she knew how much it costs to grow it herself, right? But it certain times a year, it's not really available to, you can't grow it yourself very easily. And so she would buy frozen. And I think my brother like hated spinach until he got old enough to cook it himself, because he just didn't like the like reheated frozen spinach. Like he thought it was, the texture wise was disgusting. Like, yeah, my dad like didn't eat a lot of vegetables growing up because his family pretty much served canned, just canned. That's the only like green beans and corn and like everything was canned vegetables.
I was wondering if you can talk to us a little bit about how you got from all of that to where you are now, because tell us about the website and the business and the things that you're providing as services.
So, I mean, it really started when I got pregnant with my first kid. So I had grown up, you know, with all the like growing your own food concept. That was not weird to me. But then I like, you know, went to college and was like living by myself in apartments and things and in cities. And I didn't do it. You know, like I would occasionally have like the container tomato on the patio or whatever balcony. But I didn't really do that much. And we went, you know, we did some farmers market stuff and things like that. But when I, you know, became all of a sudden was eating for two just became like a much bigger deal. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like all of these things that don't actually really mess up an adult human can really affect someone who is currently building all of their cells. Right. So like, it was just, you know, one of those things where I was like, oh my gosh, like I care about this now. And so I started trying to, you know, find places where I could find foods that I felt more comfortable eating, or feeding to my child. And then it was hard, you know, there were a lot of getting, you know, things that I wanted, things that I, you know, was used to eating, and then finding them in a place where I was comfortable with how they were being produced. It just became difficult to get both of those, you know, it's kind of like the trifecta or whatever. It's like, I could afford it and I liked how it was being produced and it was something that I actually ever eat, right? Because like there are a lot of things out there that meant one of those three things, but not all three of those three things. And so when we moved back to the Midwest, you know, I had started a garden before we'd even like broken ground on the house we built. Like I had a garden going, like construction people, do not drive over here because this is my garden. Like I just wanted to be able to, you know, choose my own stuff that I was going to grow. You know, it just kind of built from that. And then, during the pandemic, actually, you know, it was just kind of like, I'm home all the time and I have the desire to share some of this information with other people because people were all trying to like, you know, start their own gardens and stuff. And I'm like seeing people posting stuff and I'm just like, please don't do that. You know, just like, but you know, they don't know. And so then the people are putting, you know, guidance out there that's maybe not appropriate. There's lots of garden guidance out there, right? But like the answer to almost every garden question is it depends, right? Because your conditions are different. Your conditions are different
all the time.
Yeah. Like, I mean, everybody's soil is different. I mean, even within your yard, where you planted in your yard can make a difference on how you want to treat the plant. And that doesn't mean like you shouldn't try, right? I mean, one of the best ways to learn is by trying different things. And so like I have this, my initial sort of freebie getting into my gardening stuff is a scavenger hunt. And it's for you to do with your kids. It takes like 15 minutes or less. And it's literally going around your house, finding things that you already have in your house that you can use to actually start a garden like right there. So like finding, you know, repurposed containers that you can use to plant stuff in. There are tons of things in your pantry and your fridge that actually have plant seeds in them that you can actually plant. Like I have planted things directly out of my spice cabinet, whole seeds that are, you know, like dill seed, celery seed, like, you know, caraway seed, like all those things, they're seeds. And granted, if you have spices that are like 10 years old, they may not sprout, but like if they're reasonably fresh, they will, and you can grow the plant and then you can have fresh, you know, versions of that. Beans, dried beans, tomatoes and peppers are great because you don't usually eat the seeds anyway, and they are totally viable seeds. If they're a hybrid, they might grow something weird, but it will be a tomato or a pepper. It may not look exactly like the one that it came from, but you can grow something. And so it's just getting started, right? Like the act of actually planting and getting started, that's how you're going to learn. Get it started, see what comes up, see what you need to do. Yes, there's tons of ways that you can do it. There's tons of advice I can give you, but I can't make you actually do it, right? And people are like, well, I'll wait until I go to the gardening center. And then they go to the gardening center and they're completely overwhelmed because it's just insane and everything's so expensive, you know, or they'll say, I'll wait until a certain time of the year. It's like, well, no, you can grow anything inside your house, like any time of year, you can start it. You know, I mean, yes, your tomato plants will do better if they can be outside getting sun in this hemisphere anyway, in August, like they will do better. The process of learning to grow them, right, like is valuable at any time of the year, like the process of taking them from the seed and then caring for the sprout and then, you know, maybe transplanting them and learning all of those skills will then help you if you're ready to move to a larger you know, container gardening situation or a, you know, patio gardening situation or even a backyard situation. So it's just like, you got to get over that first step of like, you know, one plant in one pot on a like sunny window in your house, you are a gardener, right? You are growing your own food. It counts. You go to the store, they have the like green onions, roots and all. You take that, you put that in a pot, it's going to grow. And you are a gardener. It does not have to be something that you grew from seed to count. It does not have to be something that you have been doing for decades to count. It doesn't have to be a half an acre to count. Like it really, anybody can do it. And you can start at a very, very small phase and then expand. And I'm a big proponent of grow what you're actually going to eat, right? Like don't grow the things that you're sort of supposed to grow, right? Like people are like, oh, well, I'm not a gardener if I don't grow tomatoes. Like, what if you don't like tomatoes? Like, don't grow them. Like, why would you grow something? I have grown many things that I turned out I didn't like them, right? I don't grow them anymore. I still have some of those seeds because I can't bear to throw anything away.
You're making so many points that I feel also resonate with me, because as I just said before, with the it depends question and answer, and also truth be told, you know, information that is so conveniently found on the internet these days when it comes to food and eating and things that are quote unquote good and bad. And people will come to me as with their questions. And I'm just like, oh boy, where did you get this from? So a lot of the things that you're saying really resonate. Also the just start, you know, like just start with something. You don't have to be a cook, a chef. You don't have to do any of these things. The fact that you can make toast, boom, you've just made yourself something. I also like what you're talking too about. Get more familiar with what you have on hand already, right? Inventory your kitchen, inventory your pantry. In your case, obviously, we're talking about seeds and potentially being able to grow things. In my case, see what's left back in that cabinet that you bought on in bulk one day when it was on sale at a supermarket. What are you planning on doing with that now? Like, you know, be a little bit more experimental, try things out. And then just like you mentioned as well, trial and error with your own flavors too. If you end up saying, you know what, not for me, I would give all of the kale to your daughter because I do not like kale. And as a dietitian, people tend to you know, be curious about how could you possibly, and I'm like, there's a list of foods that I just do not like. And I'm a grown woman and I can say, I don't want that anymore. And so you develop flavors, you develop styles, you develop whatever you're doing to make yourself comfortable with it. That's really the thing. You're not going to do it unless you feel comfortable. If you feel like you're forcing yourself to do anything, you're not going to do it. And so I love that you're teaching people steps and, you know, suggestions of how to not make it feel super overwhelming.
You know, there are always ways that you can find to like, okay, you could probably make your kale in different ways to try and make it more palatable to you, right? But at the bottom line is that if you don't like it, you don't have to eat it. There are other ways to get those nutrients. And it's the same thing with plants. Like there are probably ways, like if you're like, oh, tomatoes never do well for me and I don't really like them. It's like, well, there's a million different people out there who would tell you how you can grow your tomatoes better. But like, start with the fact that, do you want them, right? Because I have a garden guide where you start out and you set your mindset, right? Mindset is so important with gardening, and like decide what success is for you, right? Not for what the internet says a successful garden is, but what is it for you? Is it growing a tomato? Is it growing a strawberry? Is it growing spinach? Like, what is it? And for me, it was like define success based on like your favorite food that has some sort of vegetable or fruit in it. Don't just pick chocolate because you can't really grow a chocolate plant, but like, I mean, you could, but not in Wisconsin anyway. But like pick something, you know, that, and then picture yourself like having that meal with your loved ones and being like, I grew this, whatever myself, right? That's a successful garden. Even if it's one meal that you only ever make once because you never grow that thing again, like it's still that success. And for that year, at least that garden was successful. And yeah, everything else you can grow more and everything else you grow is awesome. And that's sort of like bonus. I grew something that people appreciated and I was able to say that I grew it myself, which just gives it that feeling of just, you know, being that whole foods, you know, person. Did it increase the nutrition? Maybe a little bit, maybe. I mean, depends on what you were going to substitute it with, but no, did it improve
the flavor,
the experience?
Yes. Yeah. The flavor, the experience. Absolutely. What is, let's just say current, not a typical, what is a current week in the life of you right now?
I work full time on like an actual job. And then I, my kids are all now finally in school. So they're off doing their school thing during the day. Usually, you know, we have our meal plan. So like they, you know, they go off to school. Since the pandemic, I'm full-time remote. And so I'll work and then I'll go to get them off the bus. And then usually I have a 45 minutes, hour or so where either I'll do some chores, depending on if my husband is home or not. He's a bus driver for the school district. So but he sometimes has to do trips like sports seasons. And, you know, he's actually doing science Olympiad, was like taking the kids to some tournament or whatever. So like, you know, if he's home, he'll do most of the outdoor chores with the larger animals. If he's not, then I'll go deal with the animals and then I'll make dinner. And then we have dinner. It depends on if the kids have activities. You know, we do all the things, Girl Scouts and church stuff and whatever. Weekends, I will do work on my side hustle in the morning before everybody gets up. Sometimes it'll be after the kids go to bed. It just kind of depends on how much I need, you know, how much time I need to spend. I'll do things on my lunch break for my regular job, you know, just fitting in things wherever. When I'm writing the books, I tend to do that in the morning because that's the time that's quiet. So I'll get up like very early in the morning, like 5:30, and just do like an hour of writing before everybody has to get up. But you know, the books are children's chapter books, so they're not, you know, they're not like 60,000 words or something. So they're like 15 chapters, and they go through kind of the same series of a year in the life of the farm. And they're not all the same, but like there's a format that I'm kind of following. And so it's easy to kind of map out, you know, what you want to do and what you want to talk about each month and things that are happening. And then I do also have because it's based off of real stuff that happens on our farm, I have a spreadsheet basically, or a notepad full of what happened in this year, different things. You know, animals came to the farm, animals left the farm. We had big, you know, weather issues or, you know, other things happening that would be something that the spiders could possibly talk about. So we just, you know, lay it out, and then you're writing that, and then all of the stuff on, you know, the website, creating courses and blog posts and products and things. I do feel sometimes that it's like taking me away from spending tons of time with my kids. So I do try to kind of carve out, you know, from the time they get off the bus until they go to bed, which is not all that many hours of the day, really, but that you just try to, you know, be present with them and do stuff with them, try not to schedule other things. But, you know, they're very involved in stuff, and I'm, you know, I'm like the Girl Scout leader for two of them and have been always there. They do stuff with our church. And so we spend quality time with them, and we eat dinner together every night. So that's also quality time that is a something that you have to get done every day, but can become sort of quality family time.
Yeah.
By you know, sitting down and intentionally doing it together.
What are the things that you absolutely feel like you have to do every day to remain centered and grounded and have quality time, both with your family and yourself as well?
Eating dinner, or trying to figure out a way that we can all eat dinner together, is usually something. It doesn't happen every night because activities and other things get in the way at times, but we try to do that. And I usually am taking the kids, walking them out to the bus in the morning. I try to get them or to pick them up in the afternoons, but it just depends on if I have late meetings or whatever with my day job. We spend time on the weekends too. My parents live not that far away, so we go to grandma and grandpa's and hang out with them. And so just, you know, having those sort of rhythms. And we have, you know, we go to church every Sunday. The kids love going to church. I teach one of their Sunday school classes. Like, it's more time that they can spend with some of their friends from school and church that they run around with. And, you know, we have, you know, just our rituals with all of our different, what night of the week is it and what are we going to have? And, you know, they get excited about that. And so my youngest loves to help cook. So that's kind of one of our rituals. I will usually bake something Saturday mornings for breakfast, which is the only time that other than that, they kind of make their own breakfast usually. But I will usually bake something. So that's only four times a month that I have to come up with something, you know, muffins, or I bake a granola bar recipe that's in the book that they really like, or some sort of bars or something. it seems like breakfast is the only meal where like desserty kind of things are acceptable. Because like some breakfast recipes are basically the same as dessert. So I have some recipes, like I have a pumpkin bars recipe that it's like a cake. Like it's, there's not really anything breakfasty about it, but I'll make it because I am not going to serve to them as a dessert very often. And when we have a ton of pumpkins, like I will just have, you know, tons of pumpkin in the freezer and, you know, already cooked down, pureed. And so I can just bring it out. It's got a vegetable in it, right? It's exactly. And I actually substitute like applesauce in for some of the things. So like it's, I cut the sugar from the traditional sort of dessert recipe. And I also supposed to have some sort of a lemon glaze, which me, pumpkin with lemon glaze sounds disgusting. So I don't make that. But like, yeah, I'm sure you could, you know, all these things could have like cream cheese frosting and all these other things. And I just, you know, we don't do that. We just do the plain, you know, thing. And the kids love it. You know, that's like their time. They get to kind of watch their Saturday morning cartoons and have a freshly baked thing. Yeah. But then there's Saturdays where we just don't have time. And I think as my kids get older, there's going to be more of that. So I'm going to have to think a little more about your question about what can I, you know, what is going to end up being sort of the, you know, the non-negotiables, right? It's going to be harder to eat dinner together. It's going to be harder to have these sort of specific rituals. In the summertime, we do a lot of like out in the garden together. The two younger girls love to go get eggs in the chicken coop with me. Other than that, they're not doing a huge amount of chores at the moment. They did, all the girls got together and bought two of our ewe lambs last spring. And so now they are hoping that their lambs are going to give them more lambs that they can sell, because their ultimate goal is that they're going to be selling the lambs to raise money to get a horse, which we refused to buy them because we're like, horses are expensive and not particularly useful to us. And so if you want one, you got to raise the money yourselves. Right. So they went in on the sheep business in order to raise money for their horse. I think in general, yeah, it's just, you know, finding ways to spend quality time together.
What are some of the things that you think like are key takeaways, words of wisdom, first steps for anybody who might be interested in starting? You kind of, you know, gave some guidance before, mm-hmm. but if you had to whittle it down to a few things that somebody might be not sure of where and what to do.
Teaching kids or anybody, but as early in life as possible, where food really comes from, can totally change your engagement with that, can totally change your choices that you make. It can, in my mind at least, encourage you to make healthier choices when you start thinking about those types of things, regardless of whether you ever grow a stitch of food yourself. Just like being aware of the fact that this food that you're eating was grown by somebody and they, you know, took care of it. It was a living thing that they took care of and then eventually harvested. And then, you know, whether it's a soybean or, you know, a chicken or whatever, it's like it was eventually harvested and processed and brought to your plate in some way. And you could be involved in that or you could not, but it's to recognize that process exists. And then if you are interested in getting involved in the process, right, then I have like the scavenger hunt, which can help you take action to really do something, because that's the way to move forward, right? Is to take action to really do something. Like right now, you can literally download it. It's free, 15 minutes. You've already planted something. And then at the end of that, I have another like a way you can get to a 1 week, 5 day, free. It's called the Dream Garden Challenge. And so then like while you're waiting for that thing that you just planted to sprout, you can do this Dream Garden Challenge, which just walks you through. It's like 2 emails a day for 5 days, where it just walks you through like thinking through like, what would it really be like for you to have like a garden? What would your dream garden be in terms of what would you grow? Like, you know, how to set your mindset? What would you grow? Where would you grow? How would you grow? Like it gives you the resources to go look for, you know, all the things in terms of, yeah, if you're going to grow outside, you need to figure out how, you know, when's your last frost date? Like when would you need to start seeds? All those kinds of things. It's never too late to start. It's never too early to start. It's, you know, there's ways to make it work. Even if you started January 1st and you live in a snow covered land, like you could start something and get into it. And then I have other resources. I have, you know, a garden guide that helps talk more about like where you're getting all your materials and all those kinds of things. And then I have 4-week course where you can videos of actually doing all the things, you know, like doing the actual planting and how to do all that. I have a Facebook group where I'm doing a weekly Facebook Live where I answer questions. So if people have questions, I will go in once a week and answer whatever questions people have. So if you have specific things, like once you start those seeds and then you're like, what do I do now? Like, you know, send me some details. What did you start? When did you start it? What's going on now? Has it poked out of the ground yet? Or is it just sitting there doing nothing? And I can, you know, I can answer the question. So, I mean, there's lots of resources online, but I'm one person who has done all this before and am happy to answer people's questions.
Starting early, whether that means a person physically just picking up at any point and starting that way, or including other people in your family who are younger, that the earlier you begin that connection, that exposure, and the experimentation of it all helps with establishing healthier relationships with food, with your loved ones, yeah. and the ground, everything like that.
Right.
And then that
mindset. And the book series also helps you really bring in the, like, what is it like on a farm?
Yeah.
Like, how are these things actually grown? So if you don't have that, or you don't have access to seeing that because you live in the city and your kids have grown up in the city and they don't really have any way to experience that. Right. And I mean, not that they could experience in a garden, but like animal wise.
So Sarah, my last two questions are kind of a two-part question where we talk about my food pun of what's on your plate today. So meaning after you and I finish, wrap up, what are you doing next? And then also what's the next meal?
We usually make, some sort of a pasta. So it's like mac and cheese, or we do this tortellini with a pesto sauce. And we don't just do it out of the box. You always got to do add-ins, right? So I'll usually add a can of black beans, a can of tuna, maybe tomatoes, fresh things into the pasta. And then we always have like I do a plate of cut fruit usually, because I find that the kids will eat more fruit if it's cut in bite size and they get to choose. They don't have to eat a whole apple. And then they usually will, after they've finished that, then they can have, you know, fish crackers or whatever, like little snacky thing that we usually have just for them to take like at lunch for school. But then on Saturdays, we kind of finish up, you know, all the bags, all the, you know, half partially emptied bags just get finished up on Saturday. And then on my plate. So book three is currently in the process of being launched. I am going to do a book four because there's four spiders that narrate. And so this will be like the end of the set of four. And that will be the barn spider. And she's going to talk mostly about the sheep that we'll be getting because they haven't really featured much yet. Then I'm also probably going to be launching a new or updated version of my course, how to garden course. It's the current one is focused on a family garden, but I'm going to even go deeper on teaching kids specifically to garden. So that's going to be, so some of it is rebranding. Some of it is actually going deeper on making the lessons, you know, shorter, more engaging. And then my son and I have a side project where we're making a video game of our farm. So you're fighting against, what did he have? He had the potato beetles and the Japanese beetles and the there's other weeds. There's a weed boss that you have to beat, and like, and then you get like goodies, right? And the spider from the book, Sally, the garden spider, is like your little, you know, mentor or whatever. It's like walking you through all these tasks, and the tasks are going to be things like doing kind of like an interactive version of the scavenger hunt, finding your supplies or choosing your seeds, or, you know, all the things that you could do in real life. It's very early stages. So that's kind of the dream, is something fun for me to do with him. And he's interested in doing the actual programming.
The actual tangible world that you live in, the narration through the spider's point of view, and now also the digital version of some of the things that are coming out of this.
Right.
Just like,
well, it's how do you get kids engaged, right? Yeah. You have the, like, you know, actual life skills that you can learn by doing the things, right? And then you have the, like, reading stories, which is also fun, and imagining and learning. And then, yeah, like the digital side of things. I think the thing for me, thinking about it as a game, makes it easier for me to build the real life things, because it makes it so much more engaging. When you think about, like, how would I do this if I was trying to get it to be a fun video game, to make that into like a course. I mean, they talk about gamification of courses and teaching in general, but like, when you're actually creating the game, then you have to really think about, like, what would you know, how do you choose your character? What does your character do? You know, like what does the guide say to you? Like, how do they, you know, set you up to do these different tasks in a way that's going to be a fun, like gamified version, not just, oh, I need to go weed my garden. Right. But like, I need to go fight the weed boss. And the only way I can do that is I have to get my hoe and, like, you know, fight against all the weed boss's children that are invading my space, you know, because I know as soon as we create that, that's what my kids are going to talk about. When we're actually out weeding the garden, they're going to be like, the weed boss has been here. The weed boss's children are everywhere. Like,
this is the connection that they're making. I think that's so wonderful. I'm so pleased that we got a chance to connect in, as I said to some of the other people that I connected with from that Amy Porterfield's boot camp, you know, out of what I think at one point, I think it was like 9,000 people on the group or whatever. And what are the odds that you find people who have like-mindedness? So I'm really glad that there was that offer to connect with others, that we had some prompts there to reach out, that I love what I do when it comes to the media version of engaging and learning more about how just the rest of the world eats and how they procure food and what kind of behaviors shape them. And then, as I said to you before, our audiences could be interchangeable. There could be somebody who doesn't know anything about gardening or farming or anything like that, who now all of a sudden this resonates with them and they think, you know what, now's the time I want to learn how to do that. So I am so, so grateful for the time that you've taken out of your Saturday to spend with me and give me a little bit more insight about your neck of the woods out there. And I am so excited to see what the future holds for you as well. So thank you so much, Sarah. I really appreciate the time that you spent with me today.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And I love getting the word out. I feel like it's, you know, a mission in some ways, try and get as many kids the opportunity to learn about these things at a young age and take advantage of, you know, sort of the things that you can learn by gardening, other life lessons and things. And so it just kind of, you know, yeah, I encourage that person that's out there that says, oh, this resonates. Like, just go, just do it.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.